Manicero, le chant de ralliement de toutes les tropiques de l'Afrique à Cuba.
Something to cheer me up, principally. I'm being so very selfish here. Whenever I'm down, all you have to do is play a little bit of El Manicero, and you're good to go. That was Cameroon's Manu Dibango with Cuba's Eliades Ochoa and the Cuarteto Patria with El Manicero. I love that song and its many, many manifestations. No matter in what genre it is played, it really just cheers me up. This is Utrice Lead. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and I am broadcasting still from my hospital bed, and I'm so grateful to be with you live again today. It is a wonderful day, April the 28th, Tuesday, and we proceed as usual. But not really, is it? Yesterday, I shared with the audience a rather sobering diagnosis I was given that basically took me aback quite a bit. And I was so overwhelmed by the response that this outpouring of great love and support and great advice and a wonderful sharing. So many people contacted me and told me their stories of how they dealt with their health crises. And it was so uplifting to me. And of course, you can tell in my voice that it had a very positive impact, and I really appreciate it. I want to tell you how incredibly fortunate I consider myself to be in your company. And that's what I mean when I say I consider it a pleasure, both a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We don't often get the chance as human beings to connect with people who uniformly have this great characteristic of being generous and giving and concerned and loving and positive and uplifting and willing to help and just good people. And having found myself in your company, I consider myself extremely fortunate. We're dealing with the issue of the diagnosis, which has been cancer of the lungs, cancer of the uterus, and of the endometrium. And we're continuing to get more and more finite about the extent to which it is present in my body. But I am absolutely convinced that we'll take this fight on and we will prevail. I absolutely am convinced of that. And I have the great fortune of, again, your support and of Gary Knowles. Gary is going to help me through this. A very dear friend now, Dr. Arthur Lewis, is going to help me through this. Many of my good friends are standing by me, and I feel absolutely convinced that we will take this fight on and we will prevail. So I'm not despondent, and I'm not despairing, and I'm not, it is not a foreboding thing to the point where it has overwhelmed me. I feel that there is a wonderful opportunity here to test alternative methods of treatment. So we will proceed with alternative protocols in this time. But it is important first right now just to get a proper diagnosis. So we're going through that phase right now. So once again, I have no words to tell you how grateful I am and how impressed I am and how lucky I consider myself to be to be on the receiving end of all of this love and concern, all of this great uplifting, these great uplifting messages. They have filled my spirit like you would not know, and they have energized me and given me even greater resolve to do the things that I want to do. And one of the things that I had begun to do and still want to do, and it is a primary concern of mine, is to finish this book I've been working on by the late Dr. John Henry Clark. It is a wonderful work, and his widow has entrusted this to me to get it done. And I can use your support in getting this done, because now, with things being as they are, there are many unforeseen costs that have entered the picture, and it would be wonderful if I can have your support in that regard. The number to call if you are inclined to support is 718-462-1830, 718-462-1830. We want to finish this work. I've been working with African World Info Systems, the publisher of Dr. Amos Wilson's works, magnificent works that I have been supporting and promoting for many years now. I consider Amos Wilson an absolute genius and still unappreciated, underappreciated scholar of the psychology of the world, and especially of the African diaspora. And he has been extraordinary in his insights and bringing an entirely different dimension of understanding to our collective and also our individual survival. So 718-462-1830 is a number to call if you would like to lend your support, your financial support, to this project. I thank you very, very much for that. It energizes me, and this is a number one priority for me. And right now, I'm all about, you know, just getting to the core of what it is I have to do. And I'm being concentrating laser beam style on those things that I really want to do. And this is a top priority. 718-462-1830. But now let's talk about Baltimore and the insidious thing that is happening here before our very eyes, where, and the most insidious of them all I could think of is CNN's Chris Cuomo and his cohorts at that media establishment, but they're not alone in this business of completely rewriting our reality and letting us know that the conflagration in Baltimore essentially is, again, another example of why it is fitting that the police act that the way they do, especially toward African-Americans, underscoring long-held prejudices and racial stereotypes, and in fact repeating the historic role of the media, especially the white media, in creating a racially bifurcated country. Two Americas, as the Kerner Commission reported, two Americas, one white, one black, separate and unequal. We are clear that this did not happen in a vacuum. The people of Baltimore turning into the streets, demanding justice in the death, the killing, some say even murder, of Freddie Gray, who died of a severe spinal cord injury. They're cleaning that up. In other words, his spinal cord was just destroyed. His voice box was crushed. And still there is an insistence that no force was used by police in his arrest, and even the arrest taking place under rather suspicious, and some would even contend, completely unconstitutional circumstances. The report we had was that Freddie Gray on April the 12th saw a police officer and for one reason or the other turned and ran. And that began the series of events that ended up with him dead. And still, there is no explanation as to how he could possibly have died in police custody without force, with a severed spinal cord, with a crushed voice box, with fractured vertebrae, and other injuries without force being applied. More than that, the police officers who were involved in his arrest themselves have not been made to really account for themselves, because Baltimore has a Bill of Rights for police officers that allows them to basically enjoy immunity from prosecution for as many as 10 days. I've talked to you about this before, the so-called 48-hour rule in New York City and many other cities across the country, where police officers who are involved in situations where they should be questioned and are potential targets of prosecution can invoke what was then popularly called the 48-hour rule, where for 48 hours or two working days, whichever works to their advantage, by law, they can resist and absolutely disobey any order by anyone to account for their actions in any circumstances. It is a right and privilege that average citizens, of course, don't have. You cannot be said to be connected to a crime, and then you tell the police, well, I'm not going to talk to you until, say, Thursday night or Friday morning. Come and talk to me then. But until then, I really am not available to you to talk. We've seen the horrific numbers across the nation, all kinds of numbers floating around as to the numbers of individuals, most of them African-American and Latino males, ending up dead at the hands of mostly white males on different law enforcement, in law enforcement organizations. And they vary, but they're horrific. They are horrific. We've seen this tidal wave coming quite a while now and cresting. We're seeing funeral after funeral, protest after protest, demand after demand for justice, that something be done, and all we keep getting are these silly explanations about, well, we are undertaking a study. Nobody gets prosecuted. Nobody gets indicted. It is a rare thing that that happens, and it's a rare thing that there's a conviction. So what is going on in Baltimore? It is a repeat of history, and the history involves the media. The media acting first and foremost as the battering ram. They come in to set the stage of discussion. They come in to, in fact, lay out the playing field of discussion. And here, it was exemplarily done by CNN and a group of its so-called correspondents and reporters who descended on Baltimore because, of course, it's television and they had great TV. They had the flames. They had the smoke. They had people in the streets. They had all these people on one side in uniform and other people throwing things at them. They had great TV. And the visual said that Baltimore was out of control. Baltimore was burning to the ground. Baltimore was on fire. And not a purposeful fire, because there are some times when you can say, there, you can understand. You don't accept it, perhaps. You don't rationalize it, but you understand it. There was no effort to bring an understanding, that is to say, a context for what people were seeing. It was important only that they see these images. And when one sees these images, you could come to only one conclusion. These are really crazy people. These are people without respect for law and order. These are just hooligans and thugs in the street. And therefore, you should have neither concern for them nor for whatever it is they are angry about. So a great deal of effort was done to imprint this in our minds. We're seeing people rushing out of buildings with their whatever they can grab before their homes go up in flames. We're seeing cars on fire. We're seeing evidence of great disorder, chaos. And nobody likes chaos. Nobody likes these kinds of images because they communicate an awful message. And that was the message that they continued to hammer home. The message was never about the context. Even now, it is not about the context. The message is, why can't you people behave? Why can't you people find another way? Why must you be so violent? And of course, the word violence is to be used, and it's used often because violence is so un-American. American doesn't have the remotest connection to violence, you see. And whatever connection it has to that word violence, that connection is usually from black people. They're the violent ones. They're the ones committing these atrocities. It is never, ever the case that the word violence is used in connection with the state, in connection with white America. So, violence, chaos, all these things that we readily accept as social ills, as the kinds of things we will not tolerate, we now willingly associate with the historic group. This is the group that historically is predisposed, genetically programmed for violence and chaos. These are the unmanageable people of our society. You should have no care at all for them or for their concerns. Because the number one thing that America requires of these people is that they behave. And behave means that you accept the violence done to you. You accept it. You rationalize that you deserve to have that kind of violence directed at you. And look, there's a whole parade of other people who look like them who are telling them the same thing. We feel for you and everything, but we are not going to tolerate this violence. They're saying this. It's speaking the same language now. And they look like the people committing these acts of violence. Now, I don't want anybody being so crazy as to suggest that I think it's a great idea to just get up one day and say, you know, today's a good day to burn some cars and loot some buildings and do all kinds of crazy things. But I have been on the planet long enough to know that there is a thing called a tipping point. And when people, for whatever reason, believe they have reached not only at that point, but beyond that point, then the other side loses the right to control their behavior. When for years now, decades now, hundreds of years now, this issue has been at the core of America's social problems. It has gone on unsolved. All kinds of tiptoeing has happened. And people come up with all these, you know, highfalutin and newfangled ways of interpreting what is very clear. This is an apartheid state, an apartheid country. And one group is self-assigned to rule all other groups. And the one group that it targets particularly are the descendants of that group it initially enslaved. And all it requires, as it did from the initial group, the first group, was that you behave and accept your subhuman status. Accept that you have no rights. Accept that you, if you have rights, they will be the rights we give you. Accept your status in the society as being completely negotiable. Just accept it and behave, and everything will be just fine. The situation is at critical point, and we've talked about this in the context of these reports by the Urban League saying, oh, there's a crisis. Well, where have you been? And the U.S., the former U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, issuing a report that people found to be, quote, stunning, unquote. And that's because they're nowhere connected to these communities. When Chris Cuomo and the other CNN types descended on Baltimore yesterday, Baltimore was as new to them as Mars. CNN doesn't cover Baltimore. The New York Times doesn't cover Bedford-Stuyvesant. You know, the Chicago Tribune doesn't cover the South Side, except to report its pathology. What's wrong? What's going wrong? And then the stereotypical stories of, here is the exception to the rule. Here's a young man, you know, who is very ambitious, as if it is so unusual, genetically unusual. He has parted from the genetic pool and acquired ambition. And this is worthy of reporting. But they do not describe how, in a systemic way, the society has basically been functioning as an apartheid state all these years. So when it is exploding before their eyes, the only thing they can do is return to their safety zone, their psychological safety zone, and their psychological safety zone puts them on the same side as the police, as the state, as those other people who want, quote, law and order, even if it supersedes human rights. So this is the question. What is happening in Baltimore? We already have the media doing its job, and that is a kind of, it is refurbishing history and getting our psychological pointers in the right place, that is to accept that these people who are doing these things, we should only see them as miscreants, as thugs, as people who are out to make trouble. But you will notice there isn't very much emphasis on what the trouble really is. Nobody wants to talk about the trouble. They want to talk about the people causing trouble, about the some kind of vague kind of trouble. I know, the funeral was held he was buried, Freddie Gray was buried and so forth, but that's incidental. The main thing now is that their car is burning in the street. And CVS was looted. And there are thugs in the street. And somebody has to be blamed for this disorder, because now Baltimore suddenly becomes an emblem of the departure from America's norm. And America's norm is about civilized behavior. It is about order. It is about respect for authority. It is about, obedience of the law. That's America. We can't have this display here before the world that some young people are out in the street and causing chaos. We're not talking about why they're in the street, because that is irrelevant for the moment. The only important thing right now is that everybody behave. Everybody should behave. And we will have those people coming out from the so-called institutions that they turn to at times like this, the black clergy and black civil rights organizations and black, quote, leaders, unquote, because this community also has a number of deficits, and one of its greatest deficits is its inability to speak for itself. So when you speak to one black person, you speak to everybody. And that's where CNN and others are getting their reports from. They grab one person, and that person will now become emblematic of how the entire community feels. They do respect diversity of opinion when they go in other communities, but black people simply have a deficit. Or maybe it's a gift that we all telepathically communicate our thoughts to each other, so that if you ask one, you might as well, you can sit back and relax, because you now know how we all think, how we all feel, what we all are going to do. So I want you to observe the unfolding of the situation in Baltimore, not only from the point of view of what's happening in Baltimore, but how the media organizations are choreographing these events so as to arrive at a kind of psychological consensus that will, in the very near future, in fact, right after things die down for a while, it will set the stage for a number of things, systemic things, including how the state reacts. And by the state, I mean not just the state of Maryland, but the state, the United States, the government, how it reacts to the issue that has been long before them and that they don't intend to deal with. They just don't intend to deal with it. They don't intend to solve it. We have a very recent reference point here, and we've talked about Baltimore. I've discussed Baltimore as one of the targeted cities in the United States for so-called imagining, reimagining, as Detroit was, as Chicago is, and New York City, Baltimore, Washington, D.C. Many so-called urban centers are being targeted for a peculiar kind of change. And that, too, is part of the story. So Baltimore is a very complex story, and we ought to understand all of the elements in this complexity. Do not go with the simplistic analysis that you get from media that tells you that this is just about people misbehaving and they're out in the streets doing awful things. We certainly have discussed on this program that the major cities, especially the cities with large African-American and Latino populations, are being targeted for ethnic cleansing. This is part of the story, but CNN won't tell you that. The Washington Post won't tell you that. The New York Times won't tell you that. And in a situation like this, you find ready compliance by the press to tell the story that we know is not the story. The story that they're telling is a story that is necessary to force compliance and to force compliant behavior while the program continues. So we'll pause here. And I'll take your questions and your calls at 888-874-4888 right after this short break. Listening to PRN.FM. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and I'm Utrice Lead. And we're talking about Baltimore and the many aspects of the story of Baltimore and the so-called crisis that it is experiencing now. As you know, last night, Baltimore experienced a major crisis with reports of looting, reports of demonstrators in the street, attacking police, and fires that destroyed many homes. The National Guard has been called out, more than 500, and it's going to be even more than that. Thousands more police officers from neighboring communities are on duty now to prevent a repeat of last night. Governor Larry Hogan has vowed that it will not happen, And the mayor of the city of Baltimore also has come under fire. Some media organizations are accusing her, and that is, it's an amazing thing that this is happening, accusing Stephanie Rawlings Blake, the mayor of Baltimore, of actually causing the problem. But nobody's talking about the real problem. What have you to say about Baltimore? And from your perspective, how do you consider the coverage? How did you learn about this? What was the way by which this information came to you? From Los Angeles, Carla, you on the air.
Oh, hi. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Great. I was watching CNN, and that's how I heard about the, I guess, quote-unquote, riots going on. And I heard two of the city council persons saying that these reactions are happening because they don't have any leadership in the community. And I found it quite shocking because if they're the city council persons and they live in the community, shouldn't they be the leaders? And I was so curious about this, I called, actually, the city council in Baltimore, and they told them my concern, because I said, if you are the city council, people should go to you and express their problems. And if they're reacting this way, that means that there's some kind of disconnect in between the two. And I was put on hold and given to a communications person, and I just got the message at their office. But to me, the issue is that if the city council person or people just said so, that there's no leadership in the area, if they're not the leaders, who are the leaders? And I think when we start having leaders who are in government, who can do things, then these things won't happen. Because the people, I think, are reacting because they have no other way to communicate their discomfort, their disillusion with the system. And that's just my comment.
Thank you. I quite agree. I think people have reached a point of utter and complete frustration and disgust, because even when they complain, they see that the complaints are typically treated, you know, as, well, you know, we're sorry that this happened, but let's move on. You know, let's get on with it. This is just an incidental fact, and we just move on. But the other claim about, well, there is no leadership. Well, there is leadership, obviously. People leading other people into activity and actions last night, but it is not the leadership that they want, but it's the leadership that does exist. So when people say, well, there is no leadership, what exactly do they mean? Here, too, there is a conundrum. There is leadership. It may not be the kind of leadership you want. It may not be the kind of leadership you like, but it is leadership, and it is apparently effective because the leadership is able to get people to follow their lead. So, you know, you can't have it every way. The thing is, people are coming to the system. They're bringing their concerns to the system. They've tried that many, many, many times. They get the same ridiculous response or no response at all. Well, what else are they supposed to do? As I said, the requirement seems to be just shut up and just go away. And, you know, somehow things will get better. Just shut up, go away, and this was a bad thing that happened, if they bother to concede that at all. But just shut up and go away. And at some point, this, as I said many times, at some point, they will not be able to dictate the terms on which people react. People will react in their own way. 888-874-4888. This is Lead Stories. We're talking about Baltimore. What do you interpret in terms of what Baltimore has become or is being presented as today and as of last night? What do you understand about Baltimore? What should we understand about Baltimore? How should we interpret Baltimore? And I'm hoping here we hear from people from Baltimore. Where are Baltimoreans? Where are they? 888 874-4888. I want you to pay particular attention to media coverage because they're doing a really incredible job of positioning us psychologically to accept a number of things that are, in my view, quite unacceptable about Baltimore. And they're telling us there's a whole other story that we ought to be concerned about in Baltimore than the one that the people out in the street say is the number one priority for them. But the media is saying, no, that's not it. It's something completely different. What is your view? You're on the air. Oh, we lost that call. Okay, 888-874-4888. It is very important in the immediate aftermath of something like this, you watch how the systems respond. Because, you know, this entire country, if not the entire world, is run by systems theory. So systems go into effect in order to achieve particular objectives. From New York City, Ali, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Tris. How you doing? I didn't listen to your show yesterday, so I guess I just heard the news about you today, and I wanted to be positive just like you. I think the positive feeling, and I think it will really, really get you through what you're going through right now.
Thank you so much. I believe so, too. Thank you very much, Ali. What are you thinking about Baltimore?
Okay, I just wanted to tell you that on Sunday I was at a meeting where a few of the people in the meeting, I don't know if I told you before, I belong to a few groups, one of them called Stop Mass Incarceration Network here in New York, which we're going to meet for the people in New York that are listening to this program. Please come today at 5 o'clock at Union Square on the 17th Street side of Union Square, which Barnes & Noble is. We're going to be there having a press conference today at 5 o'clock. But I just wanted to tell you that some of the members of this group went to Baltimore over the weekend. One gentleman specifically, I wasn't surprised because he said in that meeting on Sunday, I believe Baltimore is going to be worse than Ferguson. The people in Baltimore are very, very, very angry. So when I heard about what was happening last night, it didn't surprise me at all. Also, my husband was watching CNN, and I made him turn it off because it's true what you're saying. They're not talking about the reason why these people are on the street. They're only talking about the violence, the thugs out there, and the biggest thugs in this country are people in Wall Street, who actually, Wells Fargo, was one of those banks that went to Baltimore and made people take second mortgages. There is plenty of documentary about this where people lost their home. And you're right, that is another city that they wanted to take over. It's like here in New York City, including the Bronx, how they wanted to develop. So it is, everything is connected. It's like a web of things that the government and this capitalism system is want to take over. So we are thugs, but the bigger thugs here in your city are people in blue. But all, they only mention thugs about people of color. They never mention, they only call them thugs, and they call them gang member. And which one is the bigger mafia and gang member in this city? The police department. And you're right. They want us, they want to genocide us, and they want us to sit down. But I would say, like Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. And I mean it. And I just wanted to say solidarity with the people from Baltimore. Well done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ali, for your call. Well, from Maryland, we have Chris. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Lutrice. Sorry to hear about your illness, and I will be praying for you.
Thank
Lutrice,
you.
I'm not sure how others feel about this, but I believe this was orchestrated. It appeared to me listening to the news that there was some manipulation that had gone on. There was a peaceful rally. There was no reason to really get this upset to start destroying your surroundings. I understand the anger, the frustration, the rage that's within the people that has been going on for so long. When you are beat down and you've been led astray as far as being misguided in your actions, then of course you're going to come out with this kind of rage and anger, because there's a lot of injustice that's going on, and the racism that has permeated, that continue to permeate our United States, not just Baltimore, but the United States, is a major issue. And with the police being as barbaric as they are, especially with this young man, they still haven't figured out why he's dead. It doesn't make any sense. But I believe this was cleverly manipulated and orchestrated to spark the fire of this violence that we have now in Baltimore. It's all part of this plan to bring about this racial upheaval, this racial war that our government and the powers that be ultimately want. Because it wouldn't make any sense for us not to step back and say, let's assess this situation, let's move on as far as let's doing this correctly and getting this done legally. When we go and we destroy our own town and our own cities, it's not benefiting anyone. It's definitely not benefiting us. So that really isn't the answer. And there's another point I would like to make is that, like I said, I understand the anger and the frustration and the rage within the people. But another thing is that this has to start at home. We have to start correcting our children. Our children are just wayward. They go into these schools, the public schools, the teachers can't handle them. There's no sense of who you are. There's no understanding that, yes, we must have respect for ourselves and have a dignified way about us. It is just, we do anything. We sell drugs. We prostitute. We have alternative lifestyles. We have things that God has condemned. This issue really is about sin, ultimately. And if we do not repent, and that is another thing that is not even coming from the clergyman. Everybody, the Bible says, there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is death. All the ways of a man seem right in his own eyes. But God says that's death. We're going to have to be brought to our knees in order to finally figure out that we can't go to the government, we can't go to our councilmen, our statesmen, or whatever they are, or try to do this politically or through some type of way through the police force. God is going to bring us to our knees, because it's coming back to the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. And when we're not repenting, we're condoning all these ill ways, abortion, murder, rape, fornication, homosexuality, all these things God has
But, you know, I see where you're coming from, but I want to ask you, I want to go back to one of your earliest comments, which is, what is the incentive that the government will have in provoking a racial Armageddon, if you will? Are you there? Okay, Chris is gone. All right. Queens. We have Gwen from Queens. Thank you, Gwen.
Good afternoon, Utrice. Hi, I also want to say I'm so sorry to hear about your illness. I just started listening to you after being not laid off, but reduced hours at my job. And I'm just praying for you to get well. We need your voice and your critical analysis of issues that affect the Black community and the other community as well, Europeans as well, because it's just a total mess. It's just a total mess out here, and the at least the young people.
Well, thank you very much for your good thoughts, Gwen. Yes. Thank you so much. Yes. But tell me what you're thinking about Baltimore.
Well, I did not look at the what's going on, but I know, you know, about what happened. I try not to look too much at CNN. You know, I read what's happening on the news, you know, on my computer, and I don't blame those young people for reacting. I mean, they're being shot down for nothing. And what do you expect people to do when time after time again, nothing is done about police violence for seemingly not, you know, young people doing nothing? He's running. So what? Big deal. Why do you have to mangle him and cripple him and then it leads to his death? They don't do that to their own community. Black cops don't shoot at white men running, and white men don't shoot at white men running. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. And for people to be blaming the young people for tearing up the city, what are they supposed to be doing? They can't get jobs. They're being shot at and abused by police. They don't have a lot of people to look up to, perhaps, in their community, because people, as soon as they get a decent job, they move out the community. And what are young people supposed to do? This is absurd. A black mayor, and what is she going to do? She's got to do something. Some head's got to roll. There's got to be some kind of accountability here. And already from the jump, the new Attorney General Loretta Lynch is making inroads with the cops instead of going to the community and looking at all of the cases of police brutality and examining what's going on there and prosecuting those cases. She's making hay with the cops. I mean, I don't understand black people. I mean, it just upsets me. The more and more we so-called move ahead, some of us move ahead, the more and more we move away from our community and do for others rather than do for our community. I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Let me ask you then, Gwen, what do you think is a workable alternative? What do you think is a workable idea?
First, they have to start prosecuting these cops that are doing harm to young people and killing them for no reason. That's just obvious. I mean, sometimes the answer is just easy. It's not so hard. It's not that hard to prosecute. It wasn't that hard to prosecute George Zimmerman. I mean, you got to pick the right jury. And all of that, but I don't see how that man got off. I mean, just as well as they lock up a young black men for doing this, that, and the other, they couldn't prosecute that case correctly. They didn't want to send him to jail, and they don't want to send these white police officers to prison. Their lives are seemingly worth more than black lives, and we all know that that's not so. That is not so. Our lives are just as worthy as any European, and it's worth fighting for. And I don't condone violence, but I said, what do you want young people to do when other people are not being held accountable for what they do? These are paid public servants. Come on.
Well, what about the point that Chris made that these actions are in fact hurting the very community looking for help more than they are helping? What do you say to that?
Look, a liquor store? Come on. Do we really need a liquor store in the first place? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't claim to have all the answers, but apparently neither does the mayor of Baltimore. I mean, it's right there staring her in the face. That young man, I mean, he was running, so he was, he didn't end up crippled on his own. Those police officers injured him, and it led to his death. It's clear and simple. So, I mean, I don't, listen, what are they supposed to do? I mean, okay, a candlelight vigil and sing Kumbaya and wait for nothing to happen. We still don't even know why they stopped that young man. And if it was something, they would have already told us why. So it seemed like it was, you know, again, another black man shot in the middle of his prime years. And at the same time, you know, the prison industrial complex goes on and on and on and on and on. I don't know. But I do know I'm not going to...
I hear you loud and clear.
I love you, Eutrice, and I want you to get well. And my heartfelt, you know, do whatever you can to heal
yourself. I'm getting well already. I really am. I feel it. And for your good and kind thoughts. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I just wanted to bring this to your attention and frame it for you so that when you continue to see these reports on CNN, in the New York Times, on the Washington Post, wherever you see them, you should understand that these are not just reports. This is not just news. This is about setting a psychological roadmap for what is to come. The media have gone into their historic mode of setting up the parameters that the story that really matters isn't the story anymore. The story is whatever it is that the system wants it to be. And the system wants it to be that people are misbehaving, law and order above everything else, including human rights. And a long, long history of the denial of human rights. We have a number of other pieces in play here, and we ought to be really careful about falling for these reports that are coming out, I mean, ad nauseum. All night long, there was CNN. Oh, the breaking story, breaking story. But when you look at the breaking stories, you see the pattern. The pattern is they might as well, all of those stories might as well have come out of the governor's office or the police department. This was not journalism at all. Journalism would have required them to make some links here about what is happening in the street and what had happened on April the 12th to Freddie Gray. That's what should have happened. Why are people angry? Why are people behaving the way they are? That's the story. Expose that, pursue that, and tell the world the truth about what is happening in Baltimore. We have discussed it here, and I warned you, I told you, what's going on in Detroit, what's going on in Chicago, what's going on in Washington, D.C., and in New York City, and in Philadelphia, and across the country. This is a realignment, and it is being orchestrated, and there are many elements to it. So pay attention to that. We'll join each other tomorrow again, hopefully, and we'll continue the conversation. In the meantime, I ask for your support. You can call 718-462-1830. It's a pleasure and a great, great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye. Africa.